Hey everyone, Evan Damerel here, host of Locked On Cavs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. On today's episode, Chris and I take part in arguably one of the best episodes in Locked On Cavs history, where we're joined by Cavs play-by-play commentator John Michael. Huge thank you again to John for taking the time out of his day to talk with us all things Cavs, and we just cannot express enough how much we appreciate it. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
John, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us today. How are you doing with everything going on right now?
Well, thank you for asking. It's good to be joining you guys, Evan and Chris. We're doing good. Surviving with a six-year-old and a four-year-old in the house. So it's been wall-to-wall playing 24/7 for three straight months, but it's not getting old yet. I'm still enjoying it, so we're hanging in there. Looking forward to getting back to some semblance of a normalcy here pretty soon.
A lot of Disney movies, I imagine, with kids six and under.
Tons of Disney movies, tons. I've become a princess expert, Chris. I don't know if I should admit that, I have been. My son has been, I'm proud to say, we found a version of Major League, cable version, right? Not the movie version, but with the words edited out and everything else. And my son loves Major League, so he makes me watch it over and over, which I'm actually proud about. And that's been my four-year-old's go-to here during the quarantine over the last couple of weeks.
There you go. But not only was this a big season for the Cavs with it being their 50th season, but this is also a big season for you as well, John. What does it mean for you to take over Fred McLeod as the play-by-play announcer for the team?
Well, I mean, as you know, Evan, this season started tragically. And, you know, in a way that was very difficult for so many of us to take. Only a couple of weeks before the season began, Fred passed away, and you know, we had to move quickly. And so, you know, the move was made and we tried to make our adjustments. The one thing that we always kept in mind, though, was that, you know, what would Fred have wanted? And Fred wouldn't have wanted us to mope around and, you know, to think, woe is me. He would have said, you know, get in there and cover this team that I loved for so many years the right way. And I'm fortunate that I joined such a fantastic team, starting, of course, with my partner in Austin Carr, who I think is one of the greatest humans on the planet. I love the guy, one of the most genuine individuals you could ever meet. But a fantastic team has been put together with Fox Sports Ohio, and I consider myself quite fortunate to be a part of that. And, you know, everything we've done this season was for Fred. And I'm confident, I'm really comfortable with what we did this season. I think we did a whale of a job, particularly considering the way the season began so tragically. And I think, all things considered, this year we've made Frater proud.
John, I know just having Austin around is a big deal, but also you just have the various guys like Mark Price that came back and Booby Gibson, Brad Doherty, Cavs legend and NASCAR legend Brad Doherty. But what was it like having those guys back and working with them and getting used to their flow when you're already used to Austin's very exuberant flow?
It was great, actually. To tell you, add to that, Brad, now, you know, Brad owns a NASCAR team. Mm-hmm. NASCAR was one of the first few sports to get back going again. Wasn't always a big NASCAR fan. I was more of an Indy guy, but now that Brad's got two cars in there, now we have
he talked about this with Mark Spears, and he was like, I was more interested in NASCAR than The Last Dance, which was so Brad Doherty, an original, one of one.
Well, hey, now we got Ryan Preece to root for the 37 car and the 47 car we have to root for, Brad's car. So in case you guys are watching the next...
I'm a NASCAR guy. I'll admit. So
that's the I've Evan and Chris.
Sorry for telling you something.
No. Don't worry. I've always been a NASCAR guy, so don't worry about it.
But hey, Brad's great. I mean, you want to talk about a great addition? I think it's just nice seeing Brad back in the building again. You know, and adds so much to the broadcast. Veteran broadcaster, knows his stuff, obviously knows the game. It was fun hearing Brad and Austin. You know, they can go back and forth for five or six possessions. I never have to do a thing. It's almost like I'm stealing on those nights. So let those guys go to town. It was great. I think Brad was, like I said, huge addition to the broadcast team. But I think more so it was bigger just to bring him back into the Cavs community and to see him around the building so often. It was a great season, guys. I mean, you know, the 50th anniversary season, Mark Price back. You know, as you mentioned, Lenny Wilkins was back. Greg Elo, all those guys were back on the same night too. And it was special to see them interact and see the love that they still have for each other and the camaraderie and everything else. So that was, to me, one of the biggest parts of this season was to see some of those guys back in the building and some of those legends here once again.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps and motor oil and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Let's just take a quick step back here. You, a good connection with AC here, you both are Notre Dame alumni, and you got your degree in mechanical engineering, law, and business administration. How do you make the jump from that field to sports broadcasting?
I always played or watched sports. That's pretty much my only hobby. And much like in Ohio and Western Pennsylvania, on Friday nights, high school football is king. And I was driving around one night, heard, you know, a game, you can hear them up and down the dial. Said, I'd like to try that. So I went and I put a tape together. I submitted it to the local network. And a couple of days later, I got a call that said, hey, one of our guys got sick. Can you do a game tomorrow night? So I said, of course. Yeah, and then I hung up the phone and completely panicked because I had no idea what I was doing. Never called a game in my life. But I went out. I drove an hour and a half away to teams that were 1-7, right? And I had a ball. And I fell in love with it. And fortunately, a week later, they called me back and said, can you do a game this week? I said, of course. And football season turned into basketball and hockey season, which turned into baseball season. And suddenly, I was moonlighting at night calling high school games when I was, you know, in trial and in depositions during the day. So I got an offer from a minor league team about 4 or 5 years later to do minor league baseball. And it was one of those now or never moments. And I decided to roll the dice, put the practice of law aside and give this thing a shot. So I've been blessed. I've been fortunate to be heard by the right people at the right time for minor league baseball. I went to minor league hockey, then to the NHL before I came to the Cavaliers. So it's been a special ride and something I never take for granted.
Before I let Chris ask you, you're a Western PA guy. So are you a Steelers fan or are you a Browns fan?
Oh, you had to go there, didn't you?
That was my question. That was my follow-up there.
You really had to say that. Yeah, I grew up – my father, when the Steelers – Chuck Knoll's first season, Steelers won one game, right? Mm-hmm. So my father was able to get season tickets dirt cheap. He got four of them that next season. So I had been, yes, I grew up going to Steeler games since I was two, 3 years old.
Does everyone tease you, Ben?
You know, my popularity rating is dropping precipitously now that you asked that question. I hope you're happy.
I think you'll be okay. Cleveland fans are loyal. So
you call the Cavs game and think you're good. When you're preparing for a game, you're prepping for a game, you're kind of, you're in this position where like you're not only getting up close access from the team, but you get some other analysis. You're doing all this work to make sure you are, you know, being able to call the games accurately for fans. what is your approach for that? Like, are you writing? Like, I've different broadcasts I've talked to. It's like some of them take notes. Some of them are like that. Like, will have no notes and they'll just kind of stick with what's in their head. What is your approach to calling a game? And did it change at all when you made the transition this year to TV?
Yeah, both are good questions. I take tons of notes, and I basically have files for every team. So that if something happens, say in June, right, about Sacramento Kings that I think might be interesting at some point later on that season, I'll put it in my Sacramento Kings file. Okay. So that's something that's constant. I mean, the league gives us basically 200 pages a day of all of the articles written by the beat reporters in the NBA. So that's basically for me standard reading every day. Any article in there that's interesting, boom, it goes right into my file. I too am somebody who likes to watch the games from the two or three previous games from that team. So my DVR is working overtime, right? I'm looking ahead at the schedules, I'm taping. So usually it's after our games, you know, I can't go to bed right away. And anybody who works later on knows that you can't go right
it's
to
terrible.
Bed.
Yeah. Right. It's underrated part of the NBA is that people like when anyone who is like at the arena,
oh yeah.
No one is like, what time do you go to bed? Because if I cover a game on a weeknight or the week, and I'm getting to bed, I probably fall asleep like 1:30.
Yeah, it's about 1:32 in the morning for me. So.
Yeah. two or three, which usually gives me just enough time to get in, fast forwarding two full games to prepare for our next game. So that's how I approach, but you can't go right to bed. So that's a big part of what I do. Typically, I mean, when you ask me like rule of thumb, it's prep 10 to 12 hours for a 2-hour game. I'd say is generally about rule of thumb how you do it. Depends. If you see the Pistons all the time, it might be a little bit less. If you never see the Suns, it might be a little bit more, right? So that's kind of the way that works. The nuances are a little bit different going from radio to TV, although not that much. I mean, the one of the biggest differences is the open. You know, obviously that's the first time they see you. That's the first time you're presenting the themes. You know, you do that in radio a little bit differently than you do that on television. But prep-wise, it's not different. What you do once the game begins, I think, is a lot different, which I'll be happy to go into if you guys want to go down that path.
Oh, absolutely. Chris, if you want to take the charge here, go ahead and fire away.
Well, so when you're up close and personal and talking to different coaches, like, do you take anything that you're getting like directly from like an assistant coach that we might not get to talk to, or the media in general might not get to talk to, and then applying it? Or are you kind of trying to keep things in a way that is, you know, you're trying to make sure like that there, it is something that the general fan also might be able to kind of pick up on, a kind of gear? Like, what is, like, how deep do you want to go? Like, how detailed do you want to get during all of this?
The key is to me, Chris, is that you need to be really smart, particularly when you just get into the league at any level. It doesn't matter, minor league, whatever sport, you need to be really smart about what's airable and what's not airable. Because anytime you talk to a coach, I can almost guarantee you there's a certain percentage that's airable and there's a certain percentage that's not airable. And you need to be smart about what you go with. And once you lose that trust, it's gone. And it doesn't matter with an assistant coach, a head coach, anybody, a trainer. I mean, you know how many people lose trust on injuries and things like that. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. So you have to be, I mean, it's not like it's not rocket science, but it there's a lot of it is common sense, but you have to be smart what's airable, what's not. I like talking mostly so that they can confirm that what I'm seeing out there is what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. In terms of X's and O's, in terms of how this player is playing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They're just to confirm that, you know, these people obviously eat, sleep, drink everything, basketball 24 hours a day. Just to make sure that we're on the same page. And that, to me, is one of the biggest helps. Because then as a broadcaster, you can say with confidence whatever it is you need to say because you know you're on the right page.
Right.
So that's kind of a – in terms of talking to coaches, that's, to me, one of the biggest things that you glean from that. In terms of the difference between radio and television, if you want to go down that path,
yes.
It's funny because when you do radio – right? So much of it is nuts and bolts, all right? You got to tell where the ball is at all times. You got to tell who has the ball. You got to tell the score. You got to tell the time. And you got to do that over and over and over again. Got to say left side, right side, baseline, top of the key, right? Left corner, right corner, so important. You don't need any of that once you go into television, mm-hmm. All right? So when you do radio, you think to yourself, you know what? If I did TV, I'd have so much more time to tell stories. I have more time to, I have tons of time to do all these things because I don't have to call all the nuts and bolts. You realize quickly that's not 100% true because of the differences. You know, in radio, if I want to talk about a certain player who's not playing and I have a good story about him, I can find a way to weave him in easily, right? Now weave him in quick. If I have a good story, I'm going to be like, I'm going to shove that story down your throat because it's good and you're going to laugh and I'm going to get it in the first 6 minutes and off we go. In TV, you have to wait until that player does something or it's, you know what I mean? It's so different that you have to match what you're saying to the pictures that oftentimes you have a lot of great things to say. You just never get the opportunity to do it. Also, there's replays. Also, there's ads. Also, there's everything else where you can control all of that in radio. You don't control much of that at all in television. It takes a little bit to get used to find your spots and pick your spots better in terms of getting those stories in.
Your court placement is also different too, correct? Like you're much, you have the most intimate seat in the house as far as a broadcaster goes for TV. And I believe radio, you're a little higher up in the arena.
That's right. And in fact, I think only 6 arenas still currently have the radio on the floor. Mm-hmm. Other 23 with Staples having 2 have the broadcaster, have the radio broadcasters up. Okay. Television wise, I think it's 25 or down low. And about 4 of them are up. So it's a little, yeah. So the vantage point is a little bit different.
Do you have a preference if you're up or down?
It's interesting because in radio, I prefer to be down.
Yeah.
In radio, I mean, I like the description picks up just naturally. Even
I would pay $100 a year to get the feet of the court, honestly. Like I know like you're not going to use everything either, but it's just like I know that from everyone has ever said that I've talked about this, like the intensity of the game is just so much more apparent when you're that close and you're just seeing them move up closer and you're just seeing how they're talking to each other. There's just like another level of respect you kind of get for those guys and what they're doing when you're that up close to it.
Agreed. That's one part of it. And for a play-by-play guy, even little things like fouls, I can tell. You know, I could tell when a foul takes place if I'm right on top of it. Whereas if I'm at a distance, you know, you realize how to generic it when you're a broadcaster. Oh, there's a whistle, and you just wait for an indication. Mm-hmm. I mean, your description's better if you're closer and you can actually. That's all. So it's a little bit different being close. Now again, you're dealing with coaches jumping up. You're dealing with it. Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. We're kind of in the corner, and the fans in the front row are seated up a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot of standing and leaning when we're at home, but that's, you know, that's par for the course. Is the way it works.
You could take a straight deli at some point too. I mean, like Fred did when he took the deli, just barrels right into him. You know, I mean, you get a bottle of wine out of it or something, I'm sure. But like, you know, I can't imagine like a 6'3" Matthew Dellavedova barreling into your chest would feel good.
Yeah, Fred took a LeBron in Toronto too. Oof. The year
before. That's a big man right
there.
Not
pay me any amount of money to do that, and not at all.
Oh yeah.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They come in 16 amazing flavors that include peanut butter brownie, banana nut bread, and mint brownie, and my personal favorite right now, cookie dough. There are 8 flavors that are chocolate and nut, 8 chocolate nut-free flavors. They're covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. These are great for the health-conscious guy out there. It helps you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and they're just, again, that really great go-to protein snack for me during the day when I'm trying to eat every couple hours, get my macros, get that amount of protein I need every day to get in better shape and avoid that quarantine 15. Built Bar is a good option. Again, you can get the peanut butter brownie, the one I ate today, 20 grams of protein and only 170 calories with just 3 grams of sugar. Can't beat that. And right now, go to BuiltBar.com with promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Trust me, you're not going to want to stop ordering these once you start.
Had the Cavs come back and they had gone to Orlando, do you have an idea of what it would have been like for you?
I tell you what, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, you want to talk about basketball free-for-all? I mean, I don't know exactly how the logistics are going to play out. But one of the things proposed is that they were going to play games every other day, or teams are going to play every other day, but be every day in Orlando, games on 2 or 3 courts at, say, 11, 3, 7, 10, you know what I mean? It for a fan, if that's the way this is going to play out, I'm going to be sitting and watching NBA League Pass for 6 straight weeks. I mean, from noon to midnight, I think it's going to be fantastic. I mean, from a selfish perspective and from the Cavs perspective, mm-hmm. I wish we would have been part of it. I mean, and I would have, while I don't think that broadcasters are going to be down there, okay. I think they're going to be doing it from studios is the most likely avenue that they're going to do this. I would have loved to have been a part. I think it's going to be fantastic basketball. It's going to be like Vegas League with all those games, mm-hmm. except their count. You know?
Yeah. So,
and it's in the push for playoff. It's only teams that have a, you know, that are, you know, fighting for playoff positions. So I think it's going to be phenomenal. I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know logistically, health-wise, getting tired, fatigue-wise, how that's going to work. But, man, oh, man, it the possibilities seem pretty fun. A lot of basketball in a short period of time.
No, absolutely. And I guess my follow-up question is, how do I word this? Kind of losing my thunder here now that I think about it. How surreal does it feel that, like you mentioned, just as selfishly as a fan, like from July, end of July this year till possibly end of July, maybe next year, we're going to have continuous basketball content. Isn't that surreal to think about, especially after how long it's been since the season went on hiatus?
Yeah, it'll be different. I mean, the suggested start date for next season is December 1st. And again, that's if nothing goes sideways. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, guys? I mean, we don't know how this – there's so many unknowns right now, let alone the fact that we don't know – I mean, teams were playing well in March, they might be playing terribly in July or August. True. You know what I mean? They might have a bad six-week stretch and be gone. Yeah. Or the opposite, teams that are – you know, like 76ers are a perfect example. 76ers were reeling in March, but they have the talent that if they catch a hot streak at the right time, who knows how much damage they can do. So – I mean, there are a lot of unknowns, not just from a team perspective, but also from a league perspective. And yeah, there's who knows if the league is going to like that December start date. I mean, that's always been a proposal, but you know, the unofficial start date of the NBA is Christmas Day, right? So would it be better to stagger away from the NHL and stagger on into, you know, cut some of baseball? Maybe. I don't know. We're going to find out next year and see how it all shakes out. It's interesting times, guys. There's no question about that. We're going to find out. I think we're going to find out a lot of stuff over the next year or so.
Yeah, baseball is doing its own harm to itself now with what's going on. It's crazy.
You know what's funny, too? We know it, but I don't know about you guys, but at least I don't know what to have on TV right now when the Indians aren't around. What do you put on at night? I don't know. In the house, what to do?
I'm watching a lot of Food Network, a lot of Guy
Fieri. No Indians baseball. Yeah, see, it doesn't work.
I mean, this is the time you're like, I just love being. You're right, like having a baseball game on, even if you're not actively like detailed watching it, just having it on in the background.
That's what you have on, right?
Yeah, it's true. It feels weird. That whole thing is just, it's crazy. I'm very sympathetic to what the players are saying. When Trevor Bauer is just openly airing this out, like I'm very interested in that, what he's doing there. Shouts to Trevor. When you think about the season being moved, I mean, there's obviously like a lot of challenges in that. I mean, has any of the players like, or has JB or anyone like said anything about it? If I missed it, I totally possible, but it seems like there are some concerns about like, they don't want to miss their summer either because everyone loves having off in the summer, but it seems like at least for next year, I imagine this is like, assuming nothing goes wrong, which like that's a big asterisk in all of this, is like, and keeps me from being like 10 out of 10 excited about this coming back. Because like if LeBron gets, Evan and I were talking about this the other day, if LeBron gets COVID, it is just like, what, or like Giannis gets COVID or Embiid gets COVID. Like it's just this will get really weird. But do you imagine like that it would be like a huge, huge change to like go to this altered schedule?
Well, you asked about JB. He said, it was just this morning, actually, he said something that I didn't even think about. He said, for those of us with families, that's going to put us off kilter a little bit because it was always easy. It was basically on the same, you know, program as the school year, right? So when school ended, the kids were done, we were done working, and now we go on our vacation. We do what we do normally during the summer. Now that throws that whole thing off. And you think about players, too, that get traded or that move during the off season, need to move their families. You know, now what, your kids, do they stay behind? You know what I mean? Like, and that's something that never even dawned on me, but yeah, now if those two things are not together, that's going to be something different. That's going to be an adjustment. I don't know. I think people are used to getting their summers off, but I think if the season works out, I don't really see any issues in terms of battling any other sports. I like that they separated from the hockey play. I know there aren't a lot of folks that like both basketball and hockey. I'm an exception to that. I love both sports a ton, and I would like it if they were separated. I don't think the NBA is battling too much about the other than the dog days of summer if their playoffs are in June, July, and on into August. So, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But that was something JB brought up today that didn't occur to me prior than that.
Speaking of JB and, jumping ships here, the Cavs are in year two of life after LeBron James. And it's clear it's been a little bit of an up and down season for the Cavs. They're showing a lot of promising results with JB taking the helm. He's 5-6 as their head coach. John, as a guy who's so closely familiar with this team and around them on a day-to-day basis, what have you seen as signs of growth and encouragement for this Cavs squad?
Well, I think communication opened up drastically over those last 11 games. I think that the younger players started to hold themselves more accountable, but I think collectively as a group, this team held itself more accountable. I thought it was interesting to hear JB say that, look, they basically kept us out of the party, the NBA. They took 22 teams, and he said, if there's any kind of motivation we need – next time they have a party, we don't want to be on the outside looking in, whether it be a normal 16-team playoff party next year or whether they make adjustments. They're making some adjustments with playing games this year. Who knows? But he said, there's your motivation right there. I think you guys know what this season and really last season was all about, identifying pieces that this team can move forward with, getting those pieces to play at a higher level, a more consistent NBA level, and see what you have. And I think there were players who certainly made strides last year. I mean, Colin Sexton from year one to year two was a lot different player. And he was a lot different player in November year two than he was in January year two than he was in March year two. And that's expected. Darius Garland, he dipped his toe into the NBA this season after a grand total of 5 collegiate games. And now he knows what it's like to go up against NBA point guards, arguably the toughest position in the NBA on a nightly basis. He knows now what he needs to do, not only on the floor, but maybe, conditioning wise, which he wasn't able to do due to injuries before. He knows where he needs to be. He knows the areas of his game on which he needs to work. So it was important for him to get that taken care of. And when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, he could do that in a season where the Cavs weren't threatening for a playoff spot, right? Yeah. Now the idea is, okay, now you need to take that next step. Colin, you need to take that next step. How about Kevin Porter, right? Yeah. Kevin Porter, he gets a taste, and we got a taste of what Kevin Porter is all about. To hear J.B. Bickerstaff say that Kevin Porter at times was saying, let me guard the team's best guy on the other club, right? A 19-year-old? Yeah, I mean, think about that, guys. I mean, that's a big deal. And so – those are things that you look – when you ask me the question, Evan, those are the areas that you point to. You know what you have, and JB said the same thing. You know what Larry Nance can do. You know what Kevin Love can do. You know what Andre Drummond can do, right? I mean, we know those are known commodities. What we need to see is improvement at everybody else. I'd throw Jetty Osman into that category too, of guys that we need to continue to see take next steps. Mm-hmm. So when this team gets back to where it wants to be in the standings – are those people going to be able to play at that level? Are they going to be pieces of that team? And that's what we're in the process of finding out right now. And that, by the way, guys, is I think why the Cavs are lobbying so aggressively for these 8 teams to keep playing some kind of meaningful games or, the competitive disadvantage will be huge. Yeah, if the Cavs don't see their own guys for 9 months, you know what I mean? Particularly considering the youth of this team and where it is right now, that's a huge part of why
absolutely
the Cavs want to keep playing, why they want to be doing something right now. And I think, JB today expressed optimism that they were being heard by the NBA. He said the NBA usually does the right thing, and this would be the right thing to keep the competitive, that level playing field. If you're going to exclude teams, you got to give the other teams a chance to do something. to keep pace, you know, to practice and everything else. So I think that all blends together, guys, and what we're seeing right now and what we're waiting for over the next couple of weeks, hopefully, were that, yeah, the Cavs can play some meaningful basketball over the next handful of weeks and hopefully against some other teams as well.
Yeah, put them in another bubble. Like, I get now wanting to put, like, all 30 teams in one place, but put them in Vegas, put them in Seattle, maybe not Seattle because there was a big COVID outbreak there at the beginning, but, like, maybe not Seattle, but put them somewhere. I think that'd be interesting. John, was there a storyline that you wanted to see completed this year? There's obviously, like, a ton of different threads. Like, for me, I think KPJ's growth was just going to continue to be a really big thing, and I think Darius returning from injury would have been another really big one towards the end of the year. Was there something you wanted to see how it was going to play out over the last however many games there were left, like 17 or something like that?
I would have liked to have seen Kevin come back, Porter, that is, come back from that injury and see where he is and maybe feel like he had a fuller year, you know. You know, there was so much talk about Colin, and so many people seem to have so many opinions about Colin for some reason, you know.
Yeah, we should talk about that because if Evan and I say I think Colin, the work ethic thing with him is amazing. Like, you probably even better than us. Everyone just raves about his work ethic and just how crazy he is. And I think he's improved from, like, not being able to shoot three-pointers at the beginning of his career to, like, being, like, a 40% three-point shooter now, or, like, close to it. But he is a guy that if you say, like, either something too positive or, like, at all critiquing of him where he's at in year two, it's like people freak out, and it's really interesting. And I can't figure out why it's him, but it is a thing.
He's a polarizing player.
I'm glad that it's not just Evan and I, like, noticing this being on Twitter too much.
I'm so glad.
No, he is the lightning rod. He is the current lightning rod of the Cavaliers, no question. But, you know, just to see the thing with Colin, you said it, Chris, about the work ethic. Okay. He knows how hard he needs to work. In fact, they tell him sometimes, Colin, you need to set it. We don't want you working out 180, 200 straight days. Like, it's cool and everything. We like what you're doing, but you might need to rest every now and again. But he also knows what he needs to do to get better, right? The criticism you hear, people think, oh, he doesn't know. You know, he just does this one thing, or he doesn't do this, or he doesn't do. He knows what he needs to do. Believe me when I tell you, he's being coached up. He knows how he needs to improve. He knows their areas. Let's not forget, guys, he's 21, right? I've been in the league for 2 years. There's so many. I don't even need to point to him for you guys, but there's so many, you know, point guards throughout this league that their first couple of seasons, so what? You know, didn't have great seasons, but eventually blossomed. And remember, most of those point guards started in the NBA at 22 or 23 or 24. So it's that growth process. And Darius is in that category. I mean, you know, Darius, some of Darius's numbers, it's no secret, some of Darius's numbers weren't great, you know, and he understands that, and he knows where he needs to get better. So I think a season like the one we had, albeit the wildness that we saw in the pandemic and everything else, it's helpful, it's useful, let's build upon it, hopefully sooner rather than later, before next season, and we'll see what the Cavs have from there.
You talked about Colin being a lightning rod. I mean, Chris and I know really well amongst fans that he is a polarizing player, and a lightning rod is a better way to describe him. But how exciting is he for you as a play-by-play commentator? Just, I mean, one of your best calls and one of his best plays and one of the Cavs' best plays this season was that dunk he had on Wendell Carter Jr. And I watch it every now and then. It still gives me goosebumps because Colin is just such a dynamic player, isn't he?
He is. And, you know, JB says it's not every day you see a guy can roll out of bed and get 20, right?
That's true.
He's right. Colin basically gets 20 points every night at the age of 20, at the age of 21, right? And again, there are the criticisms. Everybody knows the criticisms, right? But the guy can score 20 points a night, okay? And he's 20, 21 years of age. So I think it is encouraging. It really is. It's encouraging to watch a young man feel slighted when he doesn't get named to the, you know, to the rookie game, the rookie sophomore game, or, you know what I mean, Stars game, and then have to come in as a replacement only in his second year. It's neat seeing that. It's neat seeing that materialize, and to have him, you know, strive to get better with that. So I think that's the attitude you want. Every coach to a man will tell you that's the kind of player. Who do you want in the locker room? The kind of kid that says, I'm just going to get better. I don't care what anybody says or I hear it, or I'm just going to get better. I feel slighted. I'm going to do what I need to do to take that next step. So yeah, is it exciting to have a guy like that on the roster? It is. Is it contagious? I think it is. Has he been, I think, more accepted by some of the veteran players over the last 2 or 3 months? I think you can tell by body language, there's no question that he has. So those are all, that's all part of the maturation process and going through everything. And that's right. That's what we want to see this season and moving into next year.
John, my last question for you is this. What is something about day-to-day life in the NBA that even people that cover the league, people that follow the league very closely as fans might miss, that you think is really important to understand when you're thinking about day-to-day life in the NBA? Is there something that players do or where you see talking to guys that people may miss that is important to understanding what they're doing on a day-to-day basis?
That's a good question. Day-to-day life in the NBA is hard. It's really, really, really hard. All right. And it's hard for the support staff. I mean, it's hard for regular people, let alone the guys who are out there killing each other 48 minutes a night. It's not easy. It's a grind. There's not a lot of, you know, it seems glamorous. You know, you hear stories about guys on the road. You see the Jordan documentary and Rodman's in Vegas and all this other stuff, right? That doesn't happen all the time, right? Particularly during the season. It's a grind. It's not easy. I mean, for everybody, the coaching staff, I mean, those guys earn their money because it's 24/7 stuff. And it makes you appreciate what goes into this. And it can be fleeting, right? I mean, you mess up, you're a player and you don't take care of yourself or you don't do the right thing and you're gone.
Yeah.
And you can't get it back. And that's the end. And who knows? And you're 23, 24, 25 years of age and you got to find something else to do. So it's a grind. It's not an easy league. 82 games is a lot of games, and 2 months of playoffs is a long, long time, gentlemen. And I mean, to do that for 4 straight seasons like the Cavs did, not just LeBron. I mean, everybody points to LeBron with the 8 strips and everything else. But that's not an easy thing to do. That's a grind. And then to come back next season, try to start all over again, not easy. Yeah. So really good question, but it's not an easy business. It's not. And, you know, when you hear the word, the grind, you hear the phrase, the grind, that's pretty much what it is.
Before we let you go, John, what do you miss most about covering the Cavs on a day-to-day basis? Because realistically, we don't know what's going to happen next. I know JB's lobbying for maybe some type of the eight team sitting out, do some type of intramural scrimmage kind of situation, but what do you miss most until we have an idea of what happens next?
I miss the people I work with. It sounds cliche.
Not at all.
You always hear, it's all about the people, right? That's what you hear when people are out of the game. Oh, I miss the people. But it is. I mean, to me, it's sitting beside Austin and watching basketball and enjoying it a couple hours, not just a couple hours during the games, but during practices and everything else and all the great people I work with. That's what you miss. Mm-hmm. You know, I miss seeing the coaching staff. I miss seeing the guys enjoy doing what they're doing. But people is where, to me, it starts and ends in this business. And that's what I'd point to first.
No, absolutely.
I think that's right. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. We really, really appreciate it. And we're looking forward to hopefully get to hear you call games again sooner rather than later. Hopefully, even if you don't get to do it in person, you have to do it in like a room somewhere. I'm looking forward to hearing you call games again.
Thank you. I don't care where it is. I'll do it right here.
There you go.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Just on Zoom.